Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Marvel's Runaways. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here tonight with Dante, Evan, and Isabella to talk about our finale of season one.
I'm so excited. Yes.
Spoiler alert, they run away.
They ran away, finally!
Finally!
No, I mean, it only took literally the entire show.
I just want to go on record as saying, like, I called that. I predicted it from our first episode that they were going to run away at the end of episode 10. I was right. It was the only thing I was right about this entire season.
Yes, I will. Let's just for curiosity's sake, and to warn everybody, we're going to spoil the entire finale of Runaways. But let's start by spoiling our predictions from our last episode.
Oh, man.
See how badly we did.
I want to see how hilarious this is.
Okay. So I was wrong because my prediction was that Nico was going to be conflicted about her relationship with Carolina. And clearly no.
Clearly no.
Woo, finally!
Can we just talk about how amazing that is?
We'll get there. I'm so happy. We will
That's
get there.
It's going to derail us.
Yes, I don't want to derail in the middle of the former predictions, but yay, loving the way that's unfolding. Mm-hmm. Isabella, actually, I guess your prediction was correct. You said that the kids would have a discussion about their various romances.
Yeah.
Aha.
So you did do that, because we had multiple, back and forth conversations. Nico, still girl of my heart, is like in the middle of everybody's conversations, right? Okay.
This makes me so happy.
All right. So let's see. Evan had a bunch here. He said there was going to be no big fight scene.
I maintain that we didn't really have one. We
kind of had sad, not really kind of good.
It pretty much went exactly how I thought it would.
Yeah, it was kind of more of a denouement than a fight scene, which I guess kind of makes sense given the story. Mm-hmm. You predicted that Leslie was also going to be an alien.
Mm-hmm. I still think she is. We just haven't seen it yet.
It has not yet been revealed.
I don't know.
I still don't think so.
Because she was pretty surprised at Carolina's
alienness,
light-upness, alien, mm-hmm. her glow. Mm-hmm.
But that could simply mean she wasn't certain that it was his daughter this whole time.
Beforehand?
Like maybe she thought it was Frank.
I mean, I am willing to say that you are not wrong in your prediction. I am not willing to go ahead and say that you were correct, but I'm willing to say that you were not
no, it
wrong.
Hasn't been proven yet for sure, but I'm still holding out that that's the case.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but she would have.
They're holding that one in reserve for later.
Yeah.
And so then, why would she be aging? We've seen her as a kid. Just throwing that out there. I'll shut up now.
Who, wait, Carolina?
Leslie.
Oh, no, we've seen Leslie as a kid.
Oh,
we
do.
We see a picture of her with Jonah as a kid.
And he's like, the same age, and she is like 12.
Right.
That was like episode 7 together. Right?
Yeah.
I had thought that was Carolina.
No, that's that is how Frank.
No, because that was when they were talking about how she has a weird relationship because he's bigger and then.
Right.
Stuff happened.
Yeah, because somebody says that again in the finale. The kid who helps them, Jim.
Yeah.
No. Vaughn. Yawn. Yeah. That's how I'm going to remember. Yawn.
Yeah. I called him Jimbo in our notes because I literally couldn't remember.
Yeah. Yawn. I'm calling him Greg.
Which is why Yawn is a good name for him.
Yawn is a good name for him.
Yep.
Your last... Oh, no. You had two more predictions, Evan, that the drilling was going to... The Gaborum was going to be kind of a Lovecraftian creature, which is still, I think, undecided. We know it's alive.
I'd say that's a soft confirmation right
there. It's kind of in the definitely still in the running.
Yep.
And then the last one was that what happens to Alex in the book happens to someone else.
Well, I predicted that what happened to Alex would be hinted at happening in this episode and that it might happen with somebody else.
Right.
And I think the thing did get hinted at in this episode.
Yeah.
The thing did get hinted at, it hasn't it hasn't happened. Well, it hasn't been shown to happen. And I am seriously refraining from talking about it because I know Regina hasn't gotten that far.
Nope. But I had that spoiled already, yeah. I think. I've had a big...
I don't want to spoil it to the audience.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it to the audience.
It's like, it's such a big spoiler. Yeah. Like, it's the big spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
If
so
it happens.
If it happens, yes. So Dante, your predictions were that Jonah was an alien masquerading as a divine being.
Okay. I mean, it was not disproven.
No,
it's still
again,
on the table.
Yeah, it's still on the table. So I'm putting question marks by the ones that we can kind of come back to when we, if I can find this notebook, when season 2 comes up.
Yep.
One adult dies, and you thought it was going to be one of the Yorks.
And I was entirely incorrect.
Yeah, that didn't happen. And then Leslie was going to betray Jonah.
And she did. And
she did.
Yes.
But did she? Dun, dun, dun.
But, yeah.
She's at least playing her cards that way.
Yeah. Yep.
All righty then.
There we go. So we had a couple.
We had more than a few.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I think we hit more than we missed.
Although I do think we all said we thought Frank was going to die, which didn't happen.
Which,
so.
Yeah, the
but he still might.
He still might. He still might be the first of, well, next
I
to.
I still think he's going to get sacrificed.
Yeah, I mean, he might get sacrificed just to go ahead and bring Victor back.
Yeah.
Did anything happen to him in this episode at all? Because I don't remember anything.
They were in that weird room, and it was dark with one of the box.
Yeah,
the box.
Sarcophagus things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Victor has been absent for the last 2 episodes. He's been shoved in the box and conveniently put away as presumably MacGuffin for season 2.
Right. Mm.
So that's pretty much where James Marsters is hanging out. I'm convinced that they just sent him in a box back to Sunnydale. convenient plot device.
Right.
So
that's funny.
All right. So quick rundown then of the major plot points. This won't take too long because
we only have one episode instead of 3.
We only have one episode, and to be frank, like not much happened.
Nope.
Like there was a lot that happened, but there wasn't much that happened.
There's a lot of character stuff that happened
that
was not action stuff.
Yeah. So they finally ran away. They ran away from the fight. They ran away from the fight to go ahead because they found out that they were seriously outclassed by Jonah, who was just like, I'm gonna go ahead and flick Molly away and, you know, throw her into a garbage truck, and that was terrible.
Yes.
And he ends up capturing Carolina, or Carolina sacrifices herself so that the rest of them can get out. Frank ends up siding with Jonah in what appears to be an attempted coup of the Church of the Gaborim, and or like a new pride with him working directly for Jonah. Speaking of pride, it appears that it is no longer a thing anymore, with the Wilders ready to quote wage war, end quote. We don't know if they're working with anybody or if they have just gone rogue at this point, which is an extraordinarily dangerous thing because Catherine terrifies me and Jeffrey has done hard time for murder. So if they're waging war, I do not want to be in their path.
Yeah,
so we've got the rest of the pride, which is Janet Stein, Leslie Dean, the Minorus, and the Yorks all seem to be united against Jonah for the time being. I put a side note that I want to see Tina versus Leslie in the absolute worst way, because I really want those two to just come to fisticuffs. Because they also found out, all the rest of them found out, that Leslie was responsible for the pipe bomb,
Amy.
Yes, and for Amy.
Which was the real blow for the parents, like all of the parents.
Yeah.
Because then they knew that all their kids were at risk.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, because like not even Tina knew. Like right. we all thought that Tina was in on it from the start. She had nothing to do with it, and she I just loved that that stone cold line. She's like, if you disappeared and never were found, nobody in this room would ask questions.
Well, yeah, because it wasn't even that Amy actually found Pride.
Right.
No, yeah.
She thought she might have.
Yeah, it was the fear that she might have, or that she might compromise them in some way over it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the other big thing, Alex exchanges some unknown bits of information to Darius in exchange for a literal rolled wad of hundos and a pistol, because apparently Alex is a gangsta now.
Isn't this the second time he's been after a gun, though?
This is the first time he accidentally found the gun in his father's desk drawer,
right?
And took it as a means of protection. Now he has actively sought out a pistol because he feels that it is the best way to defend himself.
Well, but he's the only one of them that doesn't have some sort of
bingo
powers, or he doesn't have the fistigons, or
Velociraptor.
Velociraptor or Nico's staff, and he doesn't glow.
Yep.
So I can understand why he would feel a little at risk.
Oh yeah, exactly. At this point, Nico doesn't even have the staff.
She never got that back, did she?
Nope. No, Tina.
Oh, she doesn't. I forgot.
Tina stole it at the beginning of the fight, and then it somehow got knocked away somewhere. Nico, at this point, is not shown to have it.
And we don't know if she has any kind of powers without it.
Yeah, we do not know if she is innately magical without it. So at this point, Nico is the only one who is defenseless.
Right.
We've touched on this earlier. We have a traitor, or we are presumed to have a traitor, someone feeding information to Jonah. We do not know who it is. We do not know what their motive, what their MO is at this point, but we have some sort of a traitor feeding information to Jonah, and somebody, presumably Jonah, perhaps this secret traitor, is framing the kids for the death of Destiny Gonzalez all the way back in episode 1, and they go on the run. They are in a train station ready to go to New York, and then all of a sudden they're just like, oh, look at that, that's us on the news. We gotta go. Later.
Yeah.
And
they got old Lace back.
Yes, they did get old Lace back. I was really excited about that.
I didn't think that was gonna stick. I was like, there's no way she's going to stick on for that long.
I thought she was going to follow them as soon as she's like, you know, we can't keep you with us.
Yeah,
she was following them.
She didn't say you have to go away. She just said, we can't keep you with us. And I'm like, oh, so she's totally just going to follow behind her, you know.
Yeah.
Stay out of sight. So. Yeah.
Can we also say, just how smart that dinosaur is that it managed to go ahead and not only A, follow all of them, but B, learn how to open a dumpster, get into a dumpster, close the dumpster, and hide herself underneath trash, all without being detected.
Right.
As a 10, 15 foot long velociraptor just wandering around downtown Los Angeles in the middle of the day.
The only reason why I forgive them is because... you just have to. Yeah.
because we're talking about a
bus station, right? Weird things happen at bus stations all the time.
Yeah, it's just like the alligators in the sewers, right?
It's
just
a thing.
So yeah,
velociraptors in the bus stations.
Right.
Yeah, velociraptors in the bus stations. It was just a crazy old guy there, and who cares?
Yeah. He might report, what's he gonna do? Go and say.
Yeah, it was like, oh yeah, right, there you go, Crazy Larry.
There you go, there's a dinosaur out at the bus station.
They're not going
to believe him. They're going to be like, put him in the drunk tank for a day and tell him to sober up.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. All right, so let's jump right in there. I mean, what are our thoughts on the episodes? Yay, nay, I don't know. Regina, let's start with you.
I'm trying not to jump to our final question. Mm-hmm. But my thoughts on this episode relate to what I think about the season as a whole, mm-hmm. Which was that I was a little disappointed by the fight scene. However, mm-hmm. I think it suits their characters, and I think it suits what I know of the story mm-hmm. From its origins. Like, they are not supposed to be able to fight their parents. Like, that's the whole reason why they have to run away. Mm-hmm. And so watching that scene kind of unfold that way was fun. Or not fun, but kind of suited the story, I think. Yeah. I am really pleased at the depth of character development they've gone through in everybody. And I know a lot of our discussion has focused on the parents being made to be super empathetic characters. But I really do feel like I have a good sense of who all of the characters are. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that they took the time to unpack the parents' response to Leslie's betrayals, of the Yorks and of what happened with Amy, because there was really something special in watching Tina's reaction to that, like the depth of feeling that she portrayed in that scene, I thought was really important. So I'm glad for the character development. I would have liked a little bit more kind of like pizzazz because it was a season finale.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, you know, you're expecting that big fight scene between the parents and the kids.
Yeah, so I think they're kind of following a little bit in the Game of Thrones where, like, the penultimate episode has, like, the bigger, like, fight, the bigger run and craziness going on, and then the final episode of the season is more the denouement. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So, all right, what about you, Isabella?
So, this was my favorite episode so far. Yeah. They finally run away.
They finally run away. Yeah.
This entire time.
Yeah. You had said during our Slack chat that this was the episode that you wanted the entire time.
Yeah. Exactly. Because they're like on the run trying to get away from their parents. Mm-hmm. Their parents are scheming to get them back. They're trying to stay hidden and figure stuff out because they all are just a bunch of like 17-year-olds. We had dress up montage in a thrift store, which I loved.
Can I just say how much I loved Alex being the privileged kid that he is, being like, oh, look at us, Brentwood's finest, and we're getting other people's cast-offs from a thrift store. Like, God, that is such a gentrified thing to say. It's not even funny. and the fact that it's coming from a racial minority is right. Like, it just makes it sting even more. Because I'm sitting there like, I shop at thrift stores, buddy. Sorry, like, get off your high horse.
Was it Alex that said that?
It was Alex that said that.
It was? Okay.
Yeah, it was Alex that said, like, Brentwood's finest, and we're shopping at Goodwill. Oh, like, well. Get off your high horse.
Well, he also disses Gert for going to Whole Foods to get the chickens for Old Lace.
Oh, yeah.
So.
I was like, yeah, Whole Foods is the only thing that was open, right?
Chicken's $8. Well, a chicken at Whole Foods is $8. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that the writers of the show seem to be aware enough that Whole Foods is ridiculously expensive for no reason. But anyways, Isabella, I think that we have we've derailed your opinions. Continue, please.
I don't know where I was anymore. Okay, so montages, group all together for once, because I feel like most of the season they don't really.
Yeah, they're not all together.
Spend all that often. Much time all together.
Mm-hmm. All yeah, that they much. Become a team instead of just a collection of like couples.
And
I think it really showed because I wasn't underwhelmed by the fight scene at all. Because
that's good.
I mean, I thought it was realistic to what would happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they're just kids; they don't know what they're doing. They all have like powers they haven't really discovered yet. Mm-hmm. Even Caroline is just like, I guess I'll just shoot some stuff at Jonah.
Well, I wanted her to like watch him and see what he was doing and see if she could like mimic what his like.
That's what she was trying to do.
Yeah, he was like trying to like he was creating like that ball of power in his hand or whatnot. So
Yeah.
No, yeah. I was just half expecting him to yell, you know, Shuriken, you know, at some point.
Kamehameha.
It's not even my final form. How many pop culture references can we get in here? Anyways.
And the parents didn't really want to fight them either. I mean, what were they going to do?
Yeah.
Throw them down the pit?
Yeah.
I mean,
I assumed it probably would have gone just fine if Jonah hadn't showed up. Because not one of them, were they going to shoot him?
Yeah. I mean, they seem to be doing a decent job at trying to neutralize things before Jonah showed up. I will absolutely give you that. Because the Yorkses, they had that Trank gun ready to go ahead and put down Old Lace. And they were just like, okay, cool. Big threat neutralized. Now we've just got to go ahead and worry about Carolina. And she'll burn herself out at some point.
Well, they didn't know about Carolina, even.
Oh, yeah. They didn't know about Carolina.
Or Molly. Yeah.
Or Molly.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, because now that you've said that, I'm really thinking about it. It's like, yeah, like Molly would have gotten a couple of good hits in before she just fell asleep. Nico got the staff taken away from her.
But
pretty much the second that the fight started, and Tino probably would have been able to go ahead and hold up a force field long enough for Carolina's stuff to do practically nothing. And I'm pretty sure that the Fistigons would have run out of batteries at some point. And then at that point, you've got Jeffrey Wilder there with a gun pointing it at you, and just like, he's a very intimidating man. Like, if he's pointing a gun at me, I'm just gonna be like, okay.
Right.
Yeah. So it probably went better than expected had Jonah not shown up.
Yeah, it all comes down to Jonah just screwing things up for everybody.
Yeah, pretty much. Jonah that actually darn alien. Better for the kids. Yeah, I would have gotten away for it.
But Jonah is peeling aliens. Again.
Jonah is peeling again. You know, like he really needs to get like some aloe vera or something.
Well, I think that means he needs another sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah, he needs another sacrifice.
So, what do you think caused that? He like burnt himself out somehow?
That's what I'm assuming, but I don't understand why they were talking about this being the last time they had to do a sacrifice or have a ritual, and like
presumably because of what they were digging for, is because they specifically said that it was in some way connected to his power.
So maybe
I assume the thing juices him up somehow.
Yeah, so they set him back so that he's. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be charged by the floaty rocks.
Yeah.
We know them and the floaty glowy rocks. So he probably wasn't expecting necessarily to fight someone with equal powers as him because they didn't know that she.
Right. Which is why I think he burnt himself out because that's supposed to last him like a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause it's once a year they do this thing and.
Mm-hmm.
Then he ends up in the bed with the glowy sex and the mask or whatever.
You know, because that's a thing that you know, you need to sustain yourself, right?
Right.
When you're dying, you know, the first thing that's on your mind is, you know, let's go and get the horizontal tangle on, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of a PC way to say that. PG-rated. Anyways, Izzy, do you have any other thoughts on the episode before I pass the ball to Evan?
Nope.
Cool. Evan, what about you?
I thought it was a strong episode, but a weak climax. Like, I felt like it was not the best way to end the season. Just because, I mean, the fight was about what you could expect in terms of, like, how a fight between them realistically should have gone. But it was not very fulfilling as a conflict, especially considering we'd been building to that conflict the entire season and just kind of ended up being nothing. And also because it happened at the very beginning of the episode and the whole rest of the episode was kind of, it was a denouement. It was just, there was no rise in action before the end of the episode. So there wasn't a whole lot to kind of leave you with for the next season. I would have liked it if like, to me, like, if I'd been doing the show, I would have put, like, an episode like this, like, halfway through the season, and then have the rest of it be them figuring out everything else. Like, to me, this is the problem they run into when they spend so much of the rest of the season building the relationships between the characters, because they didn't really come out of it with much of a payoff. And I also feel like it shows kind of the problem I was talking about how the parents were not seeing enough of a villainous aspect of them, because already it seems like their plans are falling apart when we never got to a point where we fully appreciated how much their plans needed to fall apart. And at this point, the only one who seems like a straight-up villain is Jonah, who is such a villain that, like, it's ever since he walked onto the stage, it's been impossible to see him as anything else. So I feel like it's almost like they were building up a Jenga game and they collapsed it like a fourth of the way through building it. Like, it didn't have quite the impact that we would have wanted, because they never quite got to the point where it would have mattered when they did what they did. Like, I did think it was a strong episode in general, because there was a whole lot of good character development.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of good setup for future events, but I don't think there was enough of a kind of a hook to make most people want to come back next season to see what happens next.
I don't know if I agree with that, but again, I'm the outsider. I'm the person who doesn't know the story, but I think it was important to establish the character. I'm trying to think of how I would feel about the characters if they had run away on that first night. Like, I feel very deeply intertwined with these characters. Like, I watched the final episode twice within 24 hours of it coming out. Like, partially because I know I'm going to miss them. Like, that's always like a marker for me of good media, when I know I'm going to miss, you know, seeing how the characters develop. And I'm not sure. I think with the book, you might, when you're reading it, you might have a different experience of it. Especially because it's a comic book, but I think if we would have had them run away quite so quickly and I didn't have the kind of emotional investment I have with them already, I don't know if I would have felt the same way about them. I don't know if my empathy is really high for them right now. And I don't know if it would have been as high if they had run away at the beginning.
Uh-huh. Well, it's different in the comic, because you do get to know them in the comic when they run away, but it's in a different capacity.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Right now you've seen more of what their normal everyday lives are like. And like from this point on, they won't have that. Like, they're on the run. They're not going to be your normal high school teenagers anymore. That's
right.
Just out the window for them probably forever.
Right.
So it, on the one hand, it is good to see them in their element now, but also like I agree with that, but I do feel like we still just got way too much of it. And that's why I would say like this kind of an episode would have been better if it was halfway through the season, if we had like maybe 5 episodes, sort of see that kind of a normal life. And then from that point on, deal with them actually dealing with this instead of just building up towards it. And I feel like it's like I was saying too about the conflict with the parents as the villains. One of the problems we've got now is like Jonah is unambiguously the villain. And at this point, he's the only one who's unambiguously a villain. And because they've painted all the other parents as being sympathetic to one degree or another, he's unambiguously the villain and also ridiculously outnumbered, which I think is going to be a problem when it comes to building suspense later on. Because, like, obviously he's the most powerful, but we also know he has serious weaknesses. He can't depend on his powers, that he has been relying on these people forever, because, like, as strong as he is, he's also very limited in what he can do and without cost to himself. And now it seems like it's basically one guy against all these teens and their parents, and it just doesn't seem like a compelling conflict, like, especially considering how powerful some of the parents are. and Carolina was able to go toe-to-toe with him to a standby, to a Mexican standoff, basically.
Standstill?
Like, we... Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was about for. But, like, basically, we already know he's evenly matched with one of the kids, and now all the kids plus their parents are against him. So that's... I'm not sure how effective mm-hmm. of a conflict that's going to be going forward.
That is an extremely interesting point that I hadn't actually considered, because even as you were saying it, I was thinking to myself, just like, outnumbered, but is he really outgunned? Because we saw what he can do, and I'm like, oh, I mean, like, he can be outgunned, like, literally and figuratively, because, like, we saw him at the end of the episode. He pulls up his sleeve, and
right.
you know, he's got you know, the flaky skin. So clearly he's very much in a state of vulnerability, but I can't count him out of the fight yet. I can't count him out of the fight because he has shown himself to be that cunning of a mastermind, and that ruthless of an individual, that he is willing to do almost anything to assure himself a seat at the table, assure himself his own power. And let's not forget, like, he's got Frank in the palm of his hands now. He has basically a willing servant, you know, because he went ahead and he gave him the magic Healy gloves. So Frank thinks that he's on the inner circle, when in reality, Frank's probably just a pawn. He's just a pawn, and he's probably going to be used. Not to mention, he still has Victor. He has Victor.
And he made a big overture about, you know, when he's back, things are going to change.
Absolutely. Like, Victor doesn't know anything of what's happened at this point. All he knows is that his wife shot him, and he's probably going to wake up fuming pissed. And is probably going to be willing to be like, okay, cool, Jonah, you're the best shot at me going ahead and exacting revenge on the people who have wronged me. I'm willing to say, like, Jonah, even in a weakened state, has two allies. He has shown that he is very capable of getting more. He's trying to split the church against itself at this point. There seems to be a civil war there with Leslie's power base, where Vaughn is still loyal to her, blindly loyal to her, but all the cronies seem to be pushed over to Jonah's side. So he's got he's got people.
I'm not completely convinced that Leslie isn't going to go back and side with him again either.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I fully believe she's playing her own game. I don't think she's on anyone's side but hers.
Yeah, and so if she thinks that he's going, and she also wants to protect Carolina, so.
Yeah, which is why she let her escape.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cute that Chase and Molly thought that they did this whole grand heist, and really it was just like, Leslie's just like, oh yeah, cool, yeah, they got away, great.
Right.
Like, she knew what was happening the entire time.
They're still being played by their parents.
Like, I had forgotten about Victor, but I'm not convinced that Frank is really as in the palm of Jonah's hand as you think he is. I think he's still kind of confused and trying to kind of figure out where he is in this whole thing and dealing with his own kind of inferiority complex.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I'm not 100% convinced that he's completely sold out yet.
I mean, I know that, like, Jonah has that one thing to go ahead and try to convince him that, you know, that that what he's doing is the correct action, because Frank did say, like, whatever we need to do in order to ensure Carolina's safety, like, as long as Jonah can reasonably convince him that Carolina is going to be safe with XYZ course of action, I think that Frank is just going to be on that side, because he already, like, he doesn't trust his wife, he doesn't trust any of the people in the Pride. The only person that he's got left is Jonah, who has, you know, who, as far as he knows, like, tried to go ahead and resurrect his daughter, and did a decent job at that before she got busted out of prison. I think that he's got an ally for now. I mean, we all see, like, Frank's a fairly weak-willed person. He hasn't really had that much of a spine displayed in the last couple, or in the season as a whole. Like, until he got his, you know, magical Healy gloves, because he finally had something to bring to the table.
He hasn't had a spine, but he's clearly been trying to get one. Like, he's he's definitely an impotent character, but you can also tell over the course of his arc. I think he's had, honestly, one of the biggest arcs of any of the other characters.
Oh, absolutely. Pause.
But I feel like he's definitely clearly trying to kind of find his own way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of that that I don't think he's quite as willing to sign on to being somebody else's new right-hand lackey as it might seem like he is.
Well, I mean, that's what we have season two for. I mean, they announced last Monday, the day before this episode aired, that we are getting a season two.
Yeah.
So I am very excited about that. Like, I am on board.
Well, they pretty much, I mean, they'd have a really, I would be really mad.
Yeah. If they went ahead and they pulled a Firefly on us, yeah.
Yeah, they pulled a Firefly on us, and we got to the fact where they finally ran away, and there wasn't another season. Like, they had to have had the long game in mind when they wrote it this way, because, you know, you can't build this kind of character development and then be like,
drop the mic,
we're out.
Especially when they took so much time doing the season.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been even more upset about that if it turned out that was all we were going to get.
Yeah, I'm sure it was intentional that they announced that on Monday and the episode dropped on Tuesday, because, right? Like,
absolutely.
Had we not known, and it, like, oh, they ran away. Are they going to keep it going?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I mean, it was just, like, from interviews that I have read with Brian K. Vaughan, he said that he's working on the show as the executive consultant, considering, you know, he wrote the damn thing. So he stated to interviewers that he had helped lay the groundwork that this thing can go like 100 episodes.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wow.
He was absolutely planning for the long game.
Wow. Yeah.
I just hope he's not counting on that, because that's never a guarantee.
Oh, no, of course not. Of course not. Yeah. But that was the ultimate vision.
Right. The
ultimate vision is to go 100 episodes.
It's gonna be 10 seasons at this rate.
I was about to say, 10 seasons, that'd be great.
That'd be crazy.
I hope not. I hope 5, because that's usually when things start going bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5's about the limit for a show to stay good.
Yeah. So overall, like, I was fairly happy with this episode as well, but I don't want to go ahead and, you know, browbeat, because you all have pretty much said pretty much everything else that I wanted to say. But one of the more interesting bits of the episode, at least for me, was the new budding relationship between Alex and Darius.
Mm-hmm.
I positively loved that little exchange.
Did you notice the editing on that scene? Was I the only one who picked up on it? Because I watched.
So?
It's a continuous edit. So it's one scene. Like, they're not using the cameras and jumping back and forth.
Yeah. They're swinging it back and forth.
Yeah, between. They start at Alex leaning up against the phone booth, and you know, it had been insinuated that he was going to call his parents, because that's what he had been talking to Nico about.
Yep.
And then you see Darius, and then Darius comes up, and then they follow the camera over to him, and he leans on the car, and then they're swinging back and forth between them, which I thought was a really interesting choice to have in such tight quarters and like the outdoors, and to kind of like show the like power dynamic that's kind of like literally swinging between the two of them as they're having this conversation. I just thought it was really brilliant, and I always look at the editing, because it's just part of my training, but I always love scenes that have like continuous edits like that, where it has to be in the moment. Like, the actors have to be in the moment. You can't, there's no, you know, you retake it, you start over. Like, so
no cutting, no jumping. Everything's great.
Right. Like, yeah. Everything is in the moment. So
sure. You know, that was extremely well done. Mm-hmm. I loved the way that they're talking, like they're on the level now. It's great. where Alex just like matter of fact is like, yeah, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I was sitting there like, oh god, they went ahead and went with this cliche again. But the response to that was just so good. And he's like, well, little homie, I guess that means we tight as hell. This is great. I love the way that these two are speaking to each other. It's like, it oozed of respect respect that Darius has. Like, apparently he saw something in Alex that night that he abducted him.
Well, he shot his guy.
No, yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, he shot his guy, so he knows that the kid's got moxie. But I think that it also is representative of how far Alex has grown up in the last several weeks. Weeks in showtime, not weeks, you know, in our time, obviously. Where he has basically gone from mopey teenage kid who's very sad that his friend died, and the fact that he has no other friends, to basically what he perceives to be a man at this point, because he views his father as like this epitome of evil, because like, sure, like his father is being shown to us in some sort of a sympathetic light, but let's not forget that his father has also murdered one person, a guy named Osiris, that put him in lockup the first time, and he has also now murdered 15 children. So he's still decidedly evil, and the way that he's talking to Darius is just like, okay, like, you know, like, you might be a gangster, you might be, you might be a thug, and a guy who's working and running a whole bunch of illegal operations on the streets, like, but at least you're straight up front with who you are, you know. That was the reading that I got from the scene, that Alex at least has some sort of passing respect, that this is a guy who, even though his principles might be in the wrong places, he has principles and he sticks by them. He is, and he's completely honest about who he is. Did you all get anything else from that scene?
I agree with that. I really thought it was an interesting, like I said, an interesting dynamic between them. Mm-hmm. What I thought was interesting is if you compare him to the parents, he, kind of like you said, you know, he's true to himself, but he's also the only person who hasn't flip-flopped in any way. Like, all the parents, one of the problems with the parents is this kind of like back and forth that we've seen with them. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that we're going to continue to see with them as well. And I think that is really, when I look at Darius, like you said, he is just true to who he is. And he's also got the same sort of burning curiosity the kids have. He wants to know what's going on. He wants to know why his, I can't remember, are they brothers or are they just friends?
They're best friends.
Yeah. Why his best friend would betray him to the degree that he did, and then turn his back on him once he was out, and, you know, kind of play all these games with him the first so long over this. So I think that, along with the enemy of my enemy is my friend, they have, I want to know what's really going on here. And it's really important to me to be able to do that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Evan, Isabella, thoughts on the scene, or even like any guesses as to what Alex may have told him? Because we know what Alex got in return. He got that wad of hundreds and the pistol. What do we think that he possibly gave to Darius that would merit that big of a payday?
I have theories about it.
I have no idea.
Well, I don't even think, anyway,
I have theories about it, but most of them I'm hesitant to talk about because they involve what would happen if they went the same way as they do in the comics with his character.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling they still are going to, and I have a feeling this is related to that. Mm-hmm. So I really don't want to talk about it because it's such a huge spoiler. Yeah. And like, if anybody hasn't read the comics, it's like the spoiler of the comics. So I don't want to like to go into detail about it, but I think what we're seeing here is kind of Alex starting to head in that direction.
I can absolutely sympathize with that. There were several times during the episode where I was sitting there like, and then ultimately nothing came of it. But
right, I just kind of imagined that Alex told him everything, like
everything about what was happening.
Yeah,
from episode one through now.
Yeah, I just imagined that he, you know, he would have no reason not to at that point. He would have no reason not to completely just be upfront with Darius about what his dad was doing, about what was happening, about everything that they had learned, about how they had learned it, about what they had lost, because he could turn to Darius and be like, dude, get me a computer and I can probably hack back into Wizard again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think he has anything to lose to tell him everything at that point.
Yeah.
Well, you say he has no reason, but Darius did abduct him. So
yeah,
it's like, that's a reason.
I mean, yeah. Sure. I mean, there's like, there's a lot of PTSD that all of these kids are going through at this point. Alex more so than most of them, because in addition to witnessing what they witnessed, he was also hijacked, kidnapped, right, you know, whatever. And pretty much held at gunpoint.
And he was also kidnapped for technological reasons. Like, they were trying to get into his phone. That was part of the kidnapping, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and sure, you know, like Darius's henchman is now dead. The one that's cloned Jeffrey's phone or cloned Alex's phone. But let's be real here. Like, if he's got one guy, he's probably got more where he came from. So even though Darius himself may not be a technological genius, he might have people who. He might have people who do, and I would not be surprised to see that Alex has told him, like, listen, like this is what my dad's been doing for the last 15 years. This is what the end game is, and if you hack into this server, you're gonna find 15 years worth of tapes of him going ahead and murdering kids, and you leak that to the police, you will put him away for life. And get the revenge that you want. My dad did it, or you did a dime for my dad. Like, my dad will go ahead and we'll pay it back to you, like, in kind at this point, if you ever get those tapes. Because, like, let's be real here. Like, Alex is a pretty smart guy. Like, he knows that the odds are against the runaways. He knows that, you know, like, they're, you know, at the end of the episode, they're America's most wanted teenagers. You know, like, it makes sense that he's going to go ahead and, you know, find some friends in low places to go ahead and take some of the heat off of his back. Because if the Pride needs to go ahead and find or fight a war on multiple fronts, one with the kids, one with Jonah, and now another one with Darius, then their resources are going to be spread extraordinarily thin. And it ultimately tips it into the kid's advantage, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because they get a little bit more evasion that way.
Yeah, and help, and, you know, a potential ally to keep them on the run as well.
Absolutely.
Well, it's somebody who they wouldn't get that bent out of shape about if he failed and died.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So he's kind of like
risk.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He might be able to help them, but if he ends up failing miserably and suffering the consequences, it's not like they've put anybody they really cared about or who they didn't feel like deserved that kind of a fate.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, and they're on the move anyway. It's not like he can go ahead and give up their location,
right?
Their secret base or whatever.
Yeah.
it just isn't gonna happen. Because they're not going to be staying in one place for too long. Or will they? Dun, dun, dun. I don't know. Maybe they will get a secret base. They have a secret base in the comics. Spoiler alert.
I have a feeling they're not going to go that way.
Yeah.
Although I did love that they did all that stuff by the Hollywood sign, because that's straight from the comics.
Oh, yeah. That was great. It was fantastic.
That was perfect.
So yeah, I was hoping that they were going to go ahead and find the secret base. So Regina, in the comic books, the Runaways, they go to this abandoned mansion that like got sunken, like basically underneath the earth in an earthquake or something like that, and they call it the Hostel. And episode 10 was titled Hostel. Yeah. So I was hoping beyond all hope that they were going to find this secret lair and just like camp out there, and that was going to be the end of it. But I really enjoyed how they ended it with them running.
But do they call it hostel as in like
hostel as in the place that you stay when you are backpacking through Europe?
Okay, that wasn't what they called the episode.
No, I mean no.
They call it hostile, so like.
But
I mean, danger.
They are homophobic.
It's a reference.
Though.
I mean, yeah. I'm just making sure.
No, yeah, I know.
Also, wasn't.
Our hominids were the, not confused.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was that one or a different base later, but was the hostel the one where it was like underneath the La Brea tar pits?
They go to another hostel underneath the La Brea tar pits.
Because I remember them referencing...
They run away and they're always keeping moving.
Right.
I remember them referencing the La Brea tar pits in either this episode or one of the more recent ones.
Yeah, they did. Well. Yeah, they did mention the La Brea tar pits. Which I was just really excited about. Speaking of which, like, there were Easter eggs galore in this episode. I was really excited. So in the comics, the entirety of the kids are just like, hey, we're a superhero team now. We should all take names. So like, Caroline is Lucy in the Sky, and Nico is Sister Grimm, which sounds like, you know, a 1996 AOL username. And Gert decides to call herself Arsenic, and she calls the dinosaur Old Lace. So when they open up the newspapers to the old movies, I was like, oh, look at that. They're actually going to go there. They're not just going to call it the dinosaur for another episode. It made me really happy. And then I already shared with you all the reference to Carolina's first costume.
Right.
The yellow halter top with the braid with the purple and the star and everything. It was like, it made my heart sing so much when I saw that costume. You have really no idea.
Was Molly's costume? I couldn't remember, but was Molly's costume like the same as when she tried to be Princess Powerful?
It was similar.
It was similar, at least.
It was great.
I was going to check that. Love it.
And then Nico was wearing the jacket that she wore on the cover of issue number one, you know, which I may or may not have dropped $60 to purchase because I'm an idiot and I hate money. you know,
no, you're just a fan. There's nothing
That's
wrong with that.
Entirely true. And I'm glad that I got it when I did, because it is now over $100 an issue,
nice.
For that particular issue. Let me see. So we've got so many more questions than we do answers in this episode, which was really frustrating. I mean, because like, we still have like, who's the traitor? Like, who was Jonah texting?
It could be
anybody. Like, Alex snuck off for a big long time. It could be him. You know, like, it could be Carolina, you know, because she spent a lot of time inside the church. It could be Chase, because he knows that. Because he knows that that Victor is still with Jonah, and he wants to go ahead and desperately reconnect with his father. That was his entire motivation for the last four or five episodes, and you know, stick it to his mom or whatever. It could be Leslie. It could be Tina. You know, with the same logic of, you know, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Like, it could be literally anybody, and I'm really frustrated because I don't know who, and I want to cry and I want to scream and I want more episodes right now.
And you have to wait.
I know. It's like at least it's not going to be as like bad as Doctor Who, where sometimes you're waiting like 18 months in between episodes.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, Game of Thrones, where you're waiting a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say Game of Thrones.
Or like 8 years for the books.
Yeah.
Keep waiting on those books.
So who do you all think that traitor is?
I kind of assumed it was somebody we didn't know yet. I don't know why I assumed that, but that was the first thing I went to think, was that there was somebody on the sidelines that we weren't directly familiar with that was in play now. And would be revealed in the next season.
Okie dokie. That sounds cool. What about you, Isabella? What do you think?
I still think it might be Leslie. I really don't think it's Carolina, as much as they kind of made it seem that way.
Mm-hmm.
And they did get out of there rather easily, but
yeah,
I don't see her really falling for his shtick.
Yeah,
you know,
she's
pretty.
Yeah,
I don't know.
She's pretty great.
Yes.
She's just wonderful.
But she doesn't seem easily swayed by that kind of thing.
So
even the whole like we're the only two like us in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thing.
That's crazy. So Evan, who do you think it is?
I don't want to say because I'm 95% certain I know exactly who it is and won't be wrong. No.
Okay, I got you. That's perfectly fine. I just randomly, like literally just now thinking to myself, like, maybe it's Kincaid, the assassin from a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah, that's kind of what about I was, him. Yeah. Yeah. Like the guy who helped with Amy. Who tried to get Amy to go away. That guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, him. I thought like maybe it's him. Maybe I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay. So we have at least one more thing to talk about. Can we really just talk about how cute Carolina and Nico are? And I'm really excited.
Oh, I love them so much.
I am so incredibly hyped that they actually decided to do this on a major television show. Like, I mean, Let me be frank and say, like, I don't watch a lot of television. Like, I watch the Marvel Netflix series. Like, if it has superheroes in it, I'm watching it. If it has Doctor Who in it, I'm watching it. Otherwise, not so much. So I don't know what a lot of non-hetero relationships look like on television outside of superhero and, you know, Doctor Who television. So do any of you have any other experience with major TV trends happening right now? Like, and is this as groundbreaking as I feel it is?
I don't think it's quite that groundbreaking. I think we've seen more of it in recent years than before, but it's still definitely not.
Yeah. I mean, it's groundbreaking in the way that she didn't have like a total gay panic, like he's usually the case.
Which is what I thought was going to happen, because that's what always happens. So I'm glad it didn't.
And usually the case is that one of them dies horribly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Cough. Buffy cough.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, God. Evan. Spoiler.
Yeah, I don't know who it is. So.
Right. Only if you watch a series, you'll know.
Yeah. One of those episodes in those like 8 seasons spoiled for me, but I don't know which one, so might as well not be any.
Yep. Yeah. So.
But yeah, the only other sort of, well, one that I'm thinking of is, has anybody watched The Good Wife?
I don't.
Yeah, no. I haven't watched the end of it, but there was a... I think they identified her as pansexual woman of color on that. Ooh. And so...
What's her name?
I can't remember. It's been a while.
Oh, what's her name?
What's her name?
No, I've been...
She must be a very important character.
Well, she's a supporting character. She's not a main character. I guess she kind of becomes a main character toward the end, but she starts out in very much in a support role and is kind of as a secondary side character.
Yeah.
And then becomes more significant as the series evolves. And I can see her face perfectly, but I'm bad with names. And I was highly sleep deprived when I watched most of The Good Wife. So a lot of it didn't like sink into my brain.
Kalinda. Yeah.
Was it?
Kalinda,
yes. So Kalinda's, I think I don't remember if she identifies in the show or if the showrunners or the writers talked about her being pansexual, but she definitely has sort of, multiple relationships with people of different genders and different sexes. So
cool. Yeah.
The other one I was thinking of, wait, I was just thinking of one more. Oh, I never finished Lost Girl. Lost Girl was bi.
Yes. Although Lost Girl isn't really mainstream. It's like a sci-fi show, I guess. There was The 100, but that ended badly.
I am trying to think. Like, I know at one point, I don't watch the show, but literally everybody else in my family watches it. Grey's Anatomy. There was a main cast member who was a gay.
There was a couple.
A gay doctor. I don't know who it was. I just know that there was one, and I don't know if that ended badly. But yeah,
Grey's Anatomy. Doesn't everything end badly on that show?
No. I guess. I don't know.
It's a hospital drama, so people die all the time. I mean,
as far as I'm concerned, like, all doctor shows are the same. I mean, they go into the hospital, they're really stressed, they're sleep deprived. Sometimes the patients live, sometimes the patients die. And, you know, everybody's sleeping with everybody. Like, there you go. I just wrote ER for you. Like, spoiler alert, 17 seasons of ER. You know, like, it, I think, like, it, this, it, I mean, it says a lot. Oh, yeah, like, Modern Family very prominently features a non-hetero couple.
Yes.
But, yeah, like, the fact that we're, like, struggling to come up with these, like, it makes me feel still, like, very justified. And, like, this was still, you know, this is still on the forefront of non-hetero couples becoming the norm in, you know, in major media. And I've been racking my brain and, like, running numbers. Like, I don't know that we have ever seen a non-hetero relationship in a superhero movie before. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, in any of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, like, I'm just talking, like, since Iron Man, I don't think that we've seen anything like this. Like, certainly not in any of the Netflix series so far. And as far as I know, like, and I've seen all of those movies multiple times, I don't remember one non-hetero couple.
There was a lesbian couple in Jessica Jones that were prominent.
Was there?
But they weren't, like, yeah, it was her boss, the lawyer. And they had the whole thing.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, that ended badly, I believe, but...
That ended.
Yeah. Show did, so it doesn't really count.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think I forgot about that one just because, like, it was such a turbulent relationship from the beginning that I don't think I ever really, like, counted it. But this is the first time I'm like, oh, look at that. Like, there are two women, like, actually kissing, and, like, they are, like, they're showing affection to each other, and, like, everything just looks great. Like, this is, like, this, why can't we just have more of this and just accept it? Like, this is a normal thing. because, you know, this is just the world we live in.
That's how it should be. It should just be a normal thing.
Yeah, it should. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, apart from it being super duper cute and I love everything about it, and I'm going to find my Carolina and Nico prints, both of them, and I'm going to pin them up my wall now because I can. yeah, so it is rekindled my love for these two. It's like they touch on these two's relationships in the comics as well. It goes a different way. I'm not saying what doesn't happen. I'm simply saying, like, it doesn't happen like this.
Right.
Things happen differently. So I think that is about all that we've got there. Like, so let's just start with you, Regina. Like, what are your thoughts of the season on a whole?
I really liked it. Again, like I said, in my reflections on this episode, I really like that they took so much time to develop the characters. And I know that that's kind of going against the way the story was told in the books. Mm-hmm. And it's a different entity for that reason. But I've always appreciated when I feel like TV or movie adaptations act in the spirit of the text. Mm-hmm. And have those moments where they hearken back to the text itself.
Yeah.
But don't feel like I always point at the first Harry Potter movie as, you know, having felt so hemmed in by the book and how much everybody loved the book and how much everybody mm-hmm. knew the book, that yeah. movie is terrible because it's like there's nothing that binds the scenes together. It's like scene, because they're trying to get as much of the book into the movie as possible. And there's no breathing room between them to actually have like the cinematic connections that you want to have with characters. So I'm really glad that it feels like they've taken the time to get us connected and engaged and invested with the characters, because I feel hugely invested with characters I only just met, which is awesome. So yeah,
it's pretty
great. I'm all in. I can't wait until the next season. I'm sure it's going to take forever to come out, because it always does, and I have no patience. But
I mean, and it's really unfortunate, because they have to really start to rush, because Molly's for like the actress who plays Molly, Allegra Acosta, she's 14. Ariella Baker, who plays Gert, is 19. You know, Renzi, I forget his last name, but like, he plays Alex. He's only like 19. I think Nico is 20 or 21, and Chase is 25. Carolina is 21 or 22.
High schooler,
right? Yeah, happens a lot.
I mean, that's about as old as Sarah Michelle Gellar was when she started to play Buffy.
Yeah,
she was about 23 to 25 years old when she played a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So it's not unheard of.
It makes more sense, because then they don't age. Like, casting a 14-year-old means that
Molly is going to grow up real quick.
She's going to look noticeably different in the next.
She's already too old.
And yeah, and she's going to be the only one who looks noticeably older.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, like at least the rest of them have pretty much stopped growing.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah. All right. So Isabella, what are your thoughts on a season as a whole?
I kind of agree with Evan that I would have rather this have come earlier. This whole running away thing earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a little bit of a letdown. Only in that, like, where do we go from now? I don't know. They're just like on the road now. They literally just ran off into the sunset at the end.
I mean, I'm still okay with that, though. Yeah. Let's be real here.
I was never okay with that too, but
I wasn't really afraid that they weren't going to do another season. But yeah, it's just kind of left hanging. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. So many questions.
Mm-hmm. So many questions, least, not enough answer.
At least, yes, exactly. That's what I feel like.
I gotcha.
So many questions asked, not enough answered. Although, finally, we know who killed Amy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
Finally.
Look at that. One question got answered. Like, this is going to turn into Lost. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Oh God. Let's
every time they answer a question, they ask three more.
Yep.
It's going to be wonderful. All right, Evan, what do you think? Season as a whole.
I think I have to give it an A minus. Because, like, I know I complain all the time about the exact same points, mm-hmm. and I'm still complaining about them now. I do feel like the whole show moves too slowly. They stretch too much of it out over, like, they don't get enough done in the amount of episodes that we've seen, in my opinion. And I feel like we should have gotten to the point where we're at now, about halfway through the season. But there is, like, I complain about all that stuff. Like, I've said all my issues many times already, and they're just still the only ones I have. But I still also really, really, really like the show. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to, like, pretend that I don't, because I do. Like, and even though they've deviated from the comics a lot in certain plot-type areas and the characterization of the parents and stuff, there's still so many bits that are clearly love notes for people who love the comics, just here and there, just cameos, just little bitsy things, little moments, like when they're on the Hollywood sign and things like that. It's purely from the book, like comic book frame from the book in this scene right here. And like things like that make me feel like they really care about the story. They care about the characters. They care about the fans of this story, and they're trying to do justice by them. And I feel like the show is more or less in good hands, and I feel like they're taking it in a good direction. There's still so many parts of it that I wish they would do differently than they are. And not just because I'm a fan of the way they did them in the comics and want to see that, because I'm okay with a different interpretation of it. It's more of, from a storytelling standpoint, I don't feel like they're telling as effective of a story as they did in the comics. I wouldn't mind it being different if it was as effective. I
don't right. quite think. Yeah.
So I want to see them pick that up in the future. I want to see season two become more fast-paced, more get deeper into the conflict and more of that kind of stuff that we've been missing in this. But yeah. I'm still on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I think that now that we have the establishment of, like, the characters, who the kids are, we don't need to do much in the way of an introduction next time. Like, it feels like this entire season has been one extraordinarily long, like, prog rock level long, you know, like, introduction episode to the larger series. It's basically a first episode in 10 parts. Like, let's be real here.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. You said that they have a plan for 100 episodes, which may or may not happen, but then it would be reasonable to have 1/10 of it be the setup.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I mean, and it feels to me, again, as somebody who has watched every single Marvel movie since, like, the first X-Men all the way till now, multiple times, because I hate money and I hate, you know, I hate having a life and friends. It is so relieving to, like with all of these Netflix shows, but this show in particular, to not have an origin story crammed into a half hour sequence at the beginning of a movie, or crammed into the first 20 minutes of the first episode of a television show. It feels like a really good change of pace for me to see it drawn out and take, you know, and given the time that it needs to gestate and develop and to bring forth these developments and these attachments that we as an audience have. It's making me fall in love with the characters in new and different ways that I didn't know that I could. And I've been reading these comics for years. So again, like, I'm going to be a homer. I'm going to say it's an A++++ a million, level 9,000, whatever you crazy kids are calling it nowadays, like, whatever the highest marks are. Absolutely, like, sure, it's a little bit slow of pace. Sure, the fight scene was a little bit anticlimactic and it kind of felt like, you know, whatever. But overall, I don't think that detracts from the overall quality of the series. I think this is, like, apart from Jessica Jones, this is probably the best TV show that has come out of Marvel Studios. I'm even waffling on that. Like, it might beat Jessica Jones for me.
Oh, no, 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 no. 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 For you, maybe, but no.
I mean, that's the thing. Is, like, it almost feels wrong to compare those two because they are completely different genres of television.
Yeah.
You know, like, psychological unfair. Thriller versus coming-of-age story. That's like comparing Silence of the Lambs to The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, they're both two very good movies in their own right.
Right. And probably shouldn't be pitted.
And probably should never be pitted against one another.
No.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm having.
You can have your opinions.
I'm having very terrible thoughts about, like, a Breakfast Club, Silence of the Lambs crossover in my brain space. No. And you're welcome, internet.
No, let's not go there.
Breakfast of the Lambs.
Breakfast of the Lambs. I'm alright with that.
Silence of the Breakfast Club.
Silence of the Club.
Like, I'm just having, like, this funny scene of, like, Anthony Hopkins in his cell, like, doing this thing. Like, that would be great. All right. And no. I guess that's it.
That's Runaways. So we wrapped the first season of Runaways. What did you guys think? If you're watching, listening, please let us know if you watched Marvel's Runaways, what do you think about the conclusion? Were you a fan of the books? Totally curious to see how many people are noobs like me to the story and who already knew the comic books when you went into watching it. For the Geek Embassy Watches, we return next week to...
We turn to, is it disco time?
Disco!
No.
No. No. No. Yeah, Izzy's giving us the hard no.
Next week, we will pick up on the first two, the new two episodes of the second half of season one of Star Trek Discovery. Familiarly known as Disco.
No Disco.
I'm really no excited disco. About Disco.
I'm trying to figure out how I can like open with disco music.
I mean, we can make that happen.
I'm not going to help you
I'm
with
sure
that.
There's a Star Trek disco remix out there somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure God. There probably is.
I'd be point, surprised yeah. if there wasn't.
Yeah.
You should be trekking, yeah.
So we will we'll start discussing Star Trek Discovery next week. And we've wrapped up Marvel's Runaways. Obviously, we all enjoyed it very much. Please let us know your thoughts. Visit us at the website, thegeekembassy.com. Catch us on Twitter at thegeekembassy. And until next time, make sure to run away.
So you could just say keep running.
Run away!
Keep running. Well, again, it's going to be keep dancing next time, right?
I like it. Keep this going.
We'll see you guys. Bye.
Later.
Bye.